Tonight we're on, this is a Wednesday night experience, the big book, and we finished the Nine Step Promises, and we're on page 84, and we're going to read the paragraph. It's too bad the crowd's not bigger tonight, because what we're going to read tonight has really changed my life. I say there are a few things in the big book that have really changed my life, but these... what we're going to read today is really just one or two paragraphs, and can't say how much it's helped me. We read the promises, and they're read at every meeting, and they're usually read off cards, and they're great. The ninth step promises are in the ninth step. It says before you're halfway through, you will be amazed, and they have these 12 promises that are read at most meetings. Now, we've also talked about their promises throughout the book. The greatest promise might be just on the cover page of the original. It says the story of how 100 men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And then on the forward to the first edition, first page you read, it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. And then there, we did one meeting on the third step promises, the fourth step, fifth step promises, and we did the ninth step promises. Next week we're going to do, or the week after, we're going to do the tenth step promises, which are called, I call the recovered promises. The ninth step promises I call the recovery promises. And they're all related. So it says on page 84, that we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. So there's a sudden point when you realize this for the first time, that God, you've sought God, he's disclosed himself to you, and he's making changes in your life. And the ninth step promises are really, really powerful. And they're in the ninth step because you finished 4 through 9, you're in your amends, so you're making restitution, and you've broken down a lot of the barriers between you and your higher power. So the ninth step promises are when you start to have a relationship with God, these things come true. And they're spiritually written in that these things just happen. You know peace. You'll see how your experience can help. The feelings of uselessness and self-pity just disappear. It's like, what was I doing when they disappeared? And these promises are powerful. Anybody like them? They're good, right? Powerful. And they've come true for me. And then I've read the next paragraph many times, and it says, are these extravagant promises? Are they, and everybody goes, we think not. Everybody chants at our meetings in Topeka. We think not. Now, they're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But here's the point. They will always materialize. The promises will always appear. They just appear. They become part of your thinking if you work for them. That's a great promise too. But it tells you if you don't work for them, they're not going to appear. Now, I heard a couple people who I really love talk about the meetings they're dragging on their meetings. Remember, alcohol is cunning, laughing, powerful. Without help, it's too much for us. If you're starting to slack down a little bit on your meetings, what's happening is you're getting away from your first step. And your first step, when you were completely defeated, and when you were done, and when you asked God to help you, and you're getting away from that powerlessness and complete defeat to say, well, you know, I don't need to go to 2 meetings a week. I'll go to 1 meeting a week. That's why we want to stay in touch with our first step, because our first step makes us realize that we need help, and we go to AA to get help, and we admit that we need a power. And the first way the ego tricks us is they say, you don't need those meetings, or you don't need all the steps, or you don't certainly don't need to go and listen to me. And those are just your ego, your alcoholism talking to you. Now, if you're really defeated and you recall your first step, you'll be able to see that and you'll want to change. Be very scared of when your mind tells you what you don't need to do. be really afraid of that, because your mind may be your worst enemy at times. So it says these promises always materialize if we work for them. Isn't that great? Now, who makes it quickly or slowly? We do. How long does it take to do your step? Now, some people say quickly or slowly means like the sudden spiritual experience or the slow spiritual awakening. But I like the guy who said they come quickly if you work, to do the work quickly. And if you do the work slowly, they come slowly. And if you don't do the work, they never come. Now, I've always wondered, it says, this thought brings me to step 10. Anybody see that? So what's the thought that brings me to step 10? I've thought about that a lot. What is the thought? Is it the promises? Is it God suddenly doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves? I was thinking about it today, and here's what came to me. Ninth step promises are really powerful. The ninth step promises materialize when I do the work and I'm close to God, right? The thought that if I do the work and I am close to my higher power, the promises are true in my life, that's the thought that brings me to step 10, because I need to continue doing the work for the promises to materialize. And it says that thought brings me to step 10, which suggests that I continue to take inventory. So having struggled with that, hey Matt, Clint was here. I don't know what happened to Clint. He must have gotten a call. So anyway, the thought that brings me to step 10 is that the promises are great. They're coming true in my life. I've done a lot of work for them, and I better continue doing the work or the promises won't be there. Now, we're going to tie the promises in to the next few lines. So I have to continue to take personal inventory. I'm going to inventory my thinking all the time. Now, we do that in step 4, right? And we learn how to do it and recognize our thoughts, be able to have, we have powerful tools to deal with resentment and fear, right, guys, girls? And so we know how to use the inventory process. So we're going to continue to do it all the time. And it says, continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Now, when I wasn't working the steps and I was reading them off the wall, I said, well, I'll just say I'm wrong all the time, and I'm doing step 10. But I don't think that's what it says. It could be mistakes in action. But you know what I think it means? Mistakes in my thinking. I'm going to watch for mistakes in my thinking, and I'm going to set them right. Now, the word mistakes is, they don't use any words in the big book by mistake. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, on page 6, that was funny. I'm glad you got all that. On page 67, we're getting to what we call the fourth column. We're looking at our list, and it says, putting out of my mind the wrongs others had done, I resolutely look for my own mistakes. And it says, word, I've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, fighting. The mistakes in my thinking, when I'm self-centered, these are called your character defects. So I really believe that on page 84, the mistakes I'm looking for is my character defects. Now, we're not there yet, but 3 lines later, it's going to tell me I watch for selfishness, society, resentment, and fear. Now, isn't that what we say we look for on page 67? So it's really an extension of step 4, the personal inventory, looking at the mistakes in my thinking all day long. This is the step where I learn how to live each day with God and have a life of serenity and peace and usefulness. No 10th step, I'm not working it, it's not going to happen. Now, I don't know how people live who have what I have without doing step 10. What I have to do it. I do it all day long. I meditate on this paragraph that we're reading tonight every morning. I'm lucky. I have a good mind. I've memorized the book. Now, memorizing the book won't help me because I'll go to the liquor store and quote chapter 5. Yeah. But if I meditate on it, yeah. One guy said, you know, he was on Skid Row and the guy was drinking wine and quoting how it works, reciting it. I mean, it won't help me. I can eat the book at all. But if I meditate on how I'm supposed to be during the day, then maybe that'll help me practice that during the day. And it's a visualization. And so I want to set right any new mistakes in my thinking as I go along. Why? I don't want to practice selfishness. I don't want to be dishonest. And how do we set right mistakes? Here's another thing that I saw in the book today. Probably done this paragraph, 30, 35 times at these meetings. But I saw something new. To set right any new mistakes as I go along is 6 and 7. I'm going to look for my character defects, and I'm going to set them right as I go through the day. So if I'm practicing dishonesty, I'm going to stop and say, I don't want to be dishonest right now, God. Please remove my dishonesty and help me be honest. You see? So it's a way of doing 6 and 7, which we do all day long. I do it for the rest of my life. It says, I vigorously commence this way of living. So this way of living is where I'm inventorying my thinking all day long and trying to set it right with God's help. Why is that a good idea? Because my thinking got me here. My thinking got me a wristband. My plan of life didn't work. So I don't want to live each day on that old thinking. Does this make sense? It's not the way I want to live. Now, if you want to live that way, don't do the step. See how your life is. You say, well, maybe he was making some sense. Maybe I better try this. If you're disturbed today, if you're having a problem, you've got mistaken thinking going on. We're going to look at that next week. We're going to read the spiritual axiom. I'll have Patty copy it on step 10, the spiritual axiom that we're disturbed. When we're disturbed, there's something wrong with us, and that ties into what we're talking about tonight. So I'm going to commence this way of living, taking inventory, setting right any new mistakes. As I cleaned up the past, as I'm doing step 9, because amends can take a long time, they may never get done, we're doing this. Now here's the key. The key is this: I have entered the world of the Spirit. Anybody think that sounds good? Mm-hmm. Now on the site today, which I know nobody looks at, but experiencethebigbook.org, I wrote a thought on recovery today on the world of the Spirit, which I actually read, and it made a lot of sense to me. And so what is the world? I entered the world of the Spirit. Well, where was I before I was in the world of the Spirit? See, when a promise has come true to me, for me, I now have a relationship with God, and I'm in God's world. I'm connected to Him and the people around me. When I came in here, I was separated from God's world. I was consciously separating myself from the world and God by directing my life, and it was a mess. So the steps are designed to get me back into contact with God so that I'm with Him in the now, and then I'm at peace and my life is one of usefulness and purpose. This is what it says. So the world of the Spirit is where you want to be. Now, where is God? Anybody heard of God? God's a good idea, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Where is God? God is only in the moment. And I talked about that Sunday night. In the moment is God, and God and the world of the Spirit are only in the moment. Now, if you have mistaken thinking, where are you? You're either in the future or the past. So you're gonna take inventory whenever you're in the future or the past, because then you're not in the world of the Spirit. So you want to get back into the world of the Spirit all the time. And when you're in the world of the Spirit, the promises are true. And when you're not in the world of the Spirit, they're not true. And so you've entered it by step 10. So that's why I really like people to get through the steps quickly so they can have the tools to do step 10. You don't have to do them perfectly, but you know what to do when you're angry or you're fearful. And you don't want to harm people anymore, right? And you understand about your character defects and how you want to practice the opposite way in 6 and 7. And you're working on your amends, so you're getting over your fear of people. So I'm going to enter the world of the Spirit. Now the rest of these 4 lines is how I stay in the world of the Spirit. So how do I stay in the now with God? It says, my next function in the world of the Spirit is to grow an understanding and effectiveness of how to be in that world and stay in it. That's how I interpret it. I want to be effective in the world of the Spirit, and I can only be effective in it if I'm in it. If I'm not in it, I can't be effective. And so how do I get effective in the world of the Spirit? I get connected to God in the now, and I can't be useful to God and others if I'm back in my character defects. We've talked about that a million times. If I'm in fear, what's my higher power? My fear, whatever I'm afraid of. If I'm angry, what's my higher power? Whatever I'm angry at. So I want to be connected to God and be free of the bondage of self in that moment. So I want to know how to grow an understanding of effectiveness of either how to get there and stay there, or what I do when I'm there. This is what I think it says. It's powerful stuff. You don't see many meetings, discussion meetings on World of the Spirit, do you? You don't see many on how you take personal inventory each day. This is the paragraph that's changed my life. This is the most succinct way for me to stay connected to God. I've been studying scripture. It's great. Pages and pages of how I should be. Pages of it. Endless. And it's all good. But how do I do it? Well, here, the big book, they put 5 lines to tell me how to do it. And so it's changed my life. It says it's not an overnight matter. In growing and understanding and effectiveness, it should continue for our lifetime. Now, we saw continue in the first line. I'm going to continue to take personal inventory. I'm going to continue my whole life of looking for mistakes and setting them right. I'm going to continue for my whole life trying to grow an understanding of effectiveness, trying to understand God's will for me and how to carry that out. That's another way of looking at it. Step 11. Sought through prayer and medication. Is that what it is? Or no? I'm watching Narcos. I got things on my mind. Prayer and meditation on how to get close to God, get God's power and His vision of His will for me. All right. Somebody, I was at a meeting and somebody says, "When do we get the medication?" it's AA. We laugh. It was funny. All right. So it says it should continue for our lifetime. Now, here's another word called continue again. Now, to continue something, you had to do it in the first place. So if you've never worked the steps, how can you continue to do it? And if you don't continue to do it, one day you'll say, I'm falling back on my meetings. I'm not being critical. I'm just saying how alcoholism is subtle. It regrows. You start listening to this voice that's telling you things that aren't true. You get away from your powerlessness. And once you do that, you stop seeking the power. And the one thing AA should do at meetings is remind us of our powerlessness and how we need to do this deal. We have to stay close to God all the time. So here it is. Continue for my lifetime. Now here it is again. Continue. Continue. Now here's a word that I didn't understand. I said, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Now, I thought it said, continue to wait for them. Okay, I'm going around each day. Okay, here's resentment. How am I doing? It's there. Fear, it's here. But it's not. It says you watch. Watch is different than wait. Now, who do you watch with? God. You're in the world of the Spirit. Now, if you're in the world of the Spirit with God right in the moment, you could start to see when your alcoholic thinking is starting to talk to you. So I'm with God right now, and then all of a sudden I'll say, stock market's down. And then I have a little fear. But the fear is not in the world of the Spirit. And you see where I'll get a little bit angry. And I can watch for these thoughts, and I don't have to act on them. You got to go, buddy?
No, I just got to grab a pen.
So you watch, you don't wait. I don't want to wait till I get angry. I want to start seeing when you're bothered. You ever get bothered by anything? You can see you're starting to get bothered. You say, God, I don't want to be bothered. Take it away. You start getting a little afraid. You say, God, I don't need to worry about that. You're in charge of my life. Now, a thing that ties together with this is you make a contract, and this is important stuff. I'm glad I didn't forget it. You make a contract in step 3 with God. Now, God is going to fulfill his role in the contract. Now, we give God a couple things. It's page 63, if we have time. Page 63. Am I doing a good job, Jimmy?
Great.
Because sometimes I go to the pages and I forgot to tell you where
I
am.
Still waiting for the thought.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we have the contract with God. And it says on page 63, if I take this position where God's my director and I'm going to stop playing God, he's the father, I'm the child, I have a new employer. So now I work for God and I have a contract with God. When you go to, you have an employment contract at work, right? People have that? We get an employment contract with God. It says, being all powerful, God's going to provide everything I need. Isn't that great? Now, it doesn't say what. Don't wake up every morning and tell God everything you want. He's going to give you everything you need spiritually to deal with life. Isn't that a great promise? Doesn't say that things won't happen. But when they do, God will give you everything you need to deal with it. Now, here's what I have to do. I have to keep close to him and perform his work well. So I give God worry. Anybody want to be free of worry? Good. Make a contract with God. Write it out. Give him worry and give him, he'll provide, he's your employer, and then he's going to give me everything I need. So that's God's role. Now, what I have to do is I have to stay close to him and perform his work well. Now, how do I get close to God? I do steps 4 through 9. And step 10 is where I fulfill this contract every day. I try to stay close to God all day long and do God's work well, not Michael's work well. And if I do that, I'll have everything I need. So you see how that ties together with page 84? To me, it is. It's the deal. I want to fulfill my contract with God. I want to be close to him, and I want to perform his work well. And this is how I do it. I watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. I continue to take personal inventory. I set right any new mistakes as I go along. I try to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And it says, when these crop up, not if. Sorry. If you're an alcoholic and you're alive, these things are going to crop up. Now, here's the thing. Before I did the steps, they wouldn't even crop up. They would be there, and I would be in it. Does anybody remember that? When you're in it. You don't have to even get in it now. You can just start to see it. You start to get a little antsy. You start worrying. You start, and your things are starting to bother you. You get irritable, restless. You don't have to be there anymore. You watch for it, and you're supposed to do, you watch for your selfishness. How do you know when you're being selfish? You're thinking about yourself, what you want, what you need, how you're going to get it. You're dishonest. You're dishonest with yourself or others. You can be dishonest in your behavior, but you can be dishonest in your thinking. You can be dishonest in your motives. You could say, well, I'm going to go do this and this and this, and it'll sound good, but your motives are selfish. Your motives are dishonest. And you know what resentment is. You're angry, and fear is where you're afraid of things that don't even exist. And you're angry at things that are already happened, so you watch for that. Now, here's something that nobody does. It says, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. I'm being funny, but Sandy Beach says this is the step where we wait a while. We wait a little bit. But what the big book says, when these crop up, now remember crops, you harvest, you plant a crop, and it takes a while for them to get to the full bloom. So when my resentment starts to come up out of the ground a little bit, this is a great analogy, it's starting a little bit. I don't have to wait till it's 8 feet high to deal with it. I could say, oh, it's starting to crop up. God, take it away. Clear out that field. And that's a big difference for me. I really each day try not to get more disturbed for more than 5 seconds. Now, at work, I said 2 minutes is pretty good. One time it was 5 minutes. You know, first it was 30 minutes. You know, and now as I've gotten longer in the program, I realize how futile and a waste of time it is for more than 10 seconds with anything. Now, it may take me 10 seconds to get it full in my mind, what's going on, but then I say, you know, this train just goes right through the station. Now, I don't do it all the time, but I'm so much better than I used to be. Why? Because it makes me miserable and disturbed, and I don't want to be disturbed. So when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. Isn't that great? And now here's a word that isn't emphasized enough. It says, we ask God at once. We ask God. They use that term, ask God, throughout these next pages and throughout the book. Asking God, I saw it in the book of James. When you ask God and you have the right motives and you have, you're seeking to be close to him with the right motives, he will fulfill whatever you ask. And these are spiritual promises. Don't ask for the new car. You're asking for him to change your thinking, change your separation from him, and when you do, he will do it. And you ask God at once. So it doesn't say yell at people, send the email, carry on, and then ask God to remove them. What they suggest is you do it right away before you create harm and amends. So I try to do that. When I don't, I say, well, gee, why did I do that? Why did I get disturbed? And I don't do it much anymore. None of us are perfect. But I feel really bad when I get disturbed now. I feel bad because I know it wasn't necessary. It doesn't matter what happened. I feel bad that I got disturbed because I didn't have to get disturbed. The only person who made me disturbed was me, not what happened. And I don't want to do that anymore. So that's why I say these pages changed my life. It's how I live. Now, it says you discuss them with someone immediately. So if you're really stewed up, you get on the phone and you call someone. Now, they didn't have cell phones in those days. You know, they didn't have TV. God, what a world. No wonder they had resentments. So anyway, they were good, but they had to go to people. They connected. They try to not, and what they tell here is you don't keep it inside. Now, why do I discuss something with someone immediately if I'm disturbed? What would be a good reason? Because I know from doing the fourth step that if I'm disturbed, I'm seeing things wrong. So let's say, Sandy Beach gives this analogy. He goes to work. He comes in, and he's done this project and this and that. And he comes in, and the boss says, this is crap. This is the worst thing I've ever seen. So he's really all irritable. So he calls his sponsor. He texts him 911. So he says to the sponsor, you know, I came to work, and I did this great project. And I come in, the guy tells me it's crap. He says, well, maybe it was. He said, and maybe the boss, his wife was sick, and the kids couldn't get to school, and he had a really bad morning. And he says, whatever it is, you forgive or you make amends. So no matter what happens, if you're bothered, you either forgive whatever happened or you make amends. There's no other option, except you could stay disturbed. But if you stay disturbed, that's your fault. So you either forgive whatever happened, it's just life, or you make amends if you acted wrong. And so sometimes you can't see it, so you discuss it with someone immediately. And you make amends quickly if you've harmed anyone. So you clean it up right now. Now, there are people, and I really respect them, the famous AA speakers, they do four steps all the time. They're talking about how they do their four step three times a year, and multiple four steps, and blah, blah, blah. That's fine. I'm not criticizing that. But if you clean up your crap every day, you don't have a lot to worry, to think about at night. Now, on the next page, we're going to do nightly review. But if you do things right, if you're doing it all the time, like the big book says, you should be cleaning up all day long and then at night. And when we look tomorrow or next week when we read page 86, if you're still carrying it on, then you don't want to bring that into the next day. So then you have to discuss it with somebody and you ask God to forgive you and corrective measures. So you see how these paragraphs have helped me? And then it says, here's one, I resolutely, I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Now, why do they have that in there? Okay, I watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When they start to crop up, I stop, I say, God, remove it at once. If I'm a little disturbed, I call somebody and I see the truth, I forgive or make amends, and then I turn away from what? Me. My thinking that got me disturbed to someone else. I just say, I'm turning away from my self-centeredness to someone else. So that's where this turn is so powerful. Resolutely turn my thoughts away from Michael and whatever the crap is of the moment to someone else, someone I can help. It doesn't say alcoholics. You can help anybody. You can be of helpful, kind, considerate, courteous, loving to anybody. You turn yourself away to whatever really needs to be done. And you don't have to stay disturbed at all. Isn't this wonderful? And then here's my code of living. It's hidden in here. You don't see many meetings on love and tolerance as our code of living, do you? Love, and here's the thing I misunderstood. I misread this. I said, okay, I'm going to love the ones that are, you know. It's unconditional. It's God, the way God is. Unconditional love. They are who they are. We're all God's kids. Love them. Then tolerance is another great term. Now, the thing that I knew this one time, but I'm not that smart. I forget things. Tolerance is like an engineering term for the tolerance that a substance will take with a certain amount of stress. So how much tolerance am I going to give Stu if he's starting to drive me crazy? Or how much tolerance am I going to give Jimmy B if I don't do the right page, you know? And these things, how much tolerance am I going to give people before I get worked up, you see? And so it makes a lot of sense. I give them 100%, whatever it takes. We tolerate, we accept, we are considerate of absolutely everything. And we practice unconditional love. That's our code of living. Now, I don't know about you, but I got a lot out of that paragraph. Now, I'll give you some initials to help you. WADAT. So all day long you want to do wad it. Sounds great. It sounds like a cuss word or something. WADAT. I want to watch. Then I'm going to ask. Then I'm going to discuss. Then I'm going to make amends. And I'm going to turn. So all day long, it's just five letters. Wad it. That's how I'm supposed to live. Now, we'll pick up next week. I'm going to bring in the spiritual axiom. We're going to look at that. Then the following week, we're going to look at the recovered promises and how we get our minds back. Anybody want your mind back?
Yes.
You get it on page 85. So, anyway, thanks for listening. I hope you got something out of this.